Are you gay?
Geeky?
Just enjoy hearing your good Judy's dish about the latest in pop culture?
Well, then you're in luck.
The boys of Flame On are here for you.
In every episode, we discuss the topics that entrance us.
Whether it's comics, TV,
movies,
drag queens,
or video games,
we've got you covered.
So, if you're ready for your gay and geeky slice of pop culture life,
then sit back and get ready to
Flame On!
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey guys, this is Josh and the Homebrew Hombres, Liam Malone, Max Wessel, and Doug Banks.
Hey!
We make RPG from Scratch. It's a podcast about making and playing your own tabletop role-playing games. So come listen to us work on the Scratch Dice system, an alternative to D&D and Pathfinder, and listen to our first campaign,
Echoes of the Star Crypt,
at nerdyshow.com and on your favorite podcast app.
The following episode of Flame On is presented by the Nerdy Show Network.
Geeky programming for all nerds across the multiverse.
All Nerdy Show programming is made possible by a comic shop.
Orlando's number one comic shop and nerd destination.
And with the generous support of listeners like you.
To learn how you can support this and other fine geeky programming, visit nerdyshow.com.
What's going on, everybody? Pat DeVere here, and we are back again. It's our first recorded episode of the month. We took the microsode off this month and gave you one of our Rainbow Spotlights audio edition for you to enjoy as we delved into our media binges. Okay, maybe it was just me. I've been watching a lot of The Challenge lately. I'm not going to go into a whole diatribe like I did in the last episode when I went into Survivor talk, but
I don't believe you.
Suffice it to say, I've watched at this point close to 30 seasons of The Challenge. Pretty much everything that is available to consume on Hulu and Netflix and Paramount and all of these, and now Philo, because I'm watching, you know, current seasons. But I have lots of thoughts. I actually started tweeting out thoughts the other night when probably by the time this reaches our listeners, probably a week or so ago, because I just couldn't take it no more. I went through 40 seasons of Survivor and didn't like live tweet any of that, because I was like, who's going to want to read my random, you know, opinions? I'm not Monet Exchange. but I got to a point during The Challenge where I was like, I need to say this. If I don't put this out into the ether, I will explode from just being so upset with myself. But we are back again. It is the month of April. It is April 2020, y'all. This is redonkulous. I can't believe time is flying by like this. This year is screaming through. And we are here to talk about pop culture in the world. I am joined by BJ.
Hi.
And Eric.
Hello.
And we're going to talk about some of the stuff that has, you know, been tickling our fancy over the past month. So I am going to go ahead and throw it on over to Eric to kick us off with our first topic of the month. Eric, what are you going to talk about?
It's a movie. A new movie.
A new movie?
A new movie.
I would say a newbie, but I think that's the opening show before a movie.
Oh, I thought that was Nuva Ring, and that was... birth control.
Yeah, I was going to say that's birth control.
With Maria Menounos or whatever her name is.
Yes. Oh, my God.
Come through, Maria Menounos. I almost forgot about her. See, that's what happens when you don't go to the movies.
No.
Forget about Maria Menounos.
No, the only reason I remember her is because the Speedway next to where I work, apparently the little Speedway TV thing that's on their pumps, there's like a Maria Menounos like quick facts like or like life hacks thing, and I'm just always sitting there like, why would I make cold cereal like at night, or cold oatmeal? Oh, steeped oats. Yeah, there's like a steeped oats recipe I can't get out of my fucking head because of it, because it's that's been the one for the past like 2 months.
God. Yes, she is on like all of the it's whatever that it's like a gas station network, because like I've been at Shell, I've been at BP, I've been at different ones, and like Maria Menounos pops up with her you know, she's handy dandy life hack.
She's making that shmoney.
Getting those cookies.
Get these cookies.
So I did not go to the movie theater, though, although my movie theater nearby has reopened now.
I mean, it's Florida. Fucking everything is just wide open.
Yeah, at this point.
They're just literally in Florida. You walk into a business, they just spit in your mouth. They're like, hey, come on in.
But I enjoyed this film on HBO Max. It's Godzilla versus King Kong, or just Godzilla versus Kong. The newest monster flick, which is
has he been stripped of his monarchy ranking? This is uncalled for. I'm very upset with this.
In his previous film, he was just referred to Kong Skull Island.
Listen, I would like to know when he was when he was stripped of his title, because I would like to retroactively file a complaint with the monarchy department, the monkey monarchy department.
But in last Godzilla film, he was dubbed King of the Monsters. So that's where the king went.
Listen, well, he should then he should retain his kingness.
But it is the fourth film in Legendary's Monsterverse, the connected film series. Have you guys seen the previous films?
I haven't seen any of them. And it was funny, too, because I saw Godzilla versus Kong, and I knew it was linked to Godzilla King of the Monsters.
Uh-huh.
I had no idea it was... So it's the fourth film?
Yeah, because technically the Bryan Cranston Godzilla is the first film.
Really?
And Godzilla King of the Monsters is a sequel to that. Although none of the humans really from the first film carry over to the second
film. Oh, okay. So and then technically Kong Skull Island was like a prequel, because that took place in what, like the 60s?
Yeah, just after the Vietnam War.
Okay. All right. Now I'm picking up what you. Wow, that is a weird map. That is a very weird map.
That's a whole different meaning to Viet Cong.
Boo, no.
Sorry, I had to get that joke out. I'm sorry.
You'll add the noise of crickets in post, right?
Oh, wait, hold on. You mean this?
There it is.
Yep. Pat, you really shouldn't. You really shouldn't monkey around on our episodes like this. Oh no, I wanted the horn. Oh. There we go.
Followed by
that will never ever get old.
Oh, it's... Brian made it into the episode.
He did.
Yes, points. So... Very good.
So this current movie takes place 5 years after Godzilla King of the Monsters, where at the end he killed King Ghidorah. And so Godzilla is just roaming the earth, doing whatever. And
doing hot girl shit.
Exactly. He's being quiet, you know, just chilling in the ocean until he comes up and kind of randomly attacks this apex cybernetics plant who's been doing sinister stuff. And nobody knows why, except there's a podcast host who has a conspiracy podcast against all of the apex shit going on. And he and Millie Bobby Brown go to investigate, and they find out that that Apex company is building Mechagodzilla because people don't like Godzilla for some reason.
What was funny is that, like, the Monarch group was just kind of like, we have no idea what he's doing. Like, why is he doing this? Like, and then, but it's like, all he's been attacking is Apex facilities. So I'm like, has nobody, is there no detective? Is there literally nobody else has made any like connection that they're like, you know, maybe Apex is doing weird experiments. No, we're just going to assume that he's just doing bad shit.
Yeah, the only person who's on the Apex at all is Bernie, who's a janitor and the host of the podcast.
I thought he was an engineer.
No, he kind of snuck his way into engineering.
Okay.
Yeah. So while that's going on, the island where Kong's living is kind of falling apart, and they decide, well, they're looking for a power source in the Hollow Earth, which that's where all the monsters come from, is this Hollow Earth. And they want Kong to go there and lead them to this power source. And so it's, who's the scientist? Rebecca Hall. She plays the scientist who's studying Kong. And she's adopted this little kid, Gia, who is the last of the tribe who lived on Kong's island. And she's deaf and communicates with Kong via sign language. And she kind of tells him what to do or convinces him to do stuff. She's the only human that Kong trusts. And so if you've seen the trailer, did you see at least the trailer, Pat?
I maybe in passing, I have not.
He's been hooked on reality television.
If it was in the middle of a season of Survivor or The Challenge, then yes.
If there was a commercial that popped up in the middle of some reality television, he'd be like, I can tell you exactly everything in that trailer, but no.
Can you take me by the hand? I feel better now. I don't even know what brand that commercial is for, but I know that song. Like it's on the radio and a pop hit. But no, I haven't seen much for this movie. I know it's out there. I just hadn't really seen much of it.
Yeah, because the big scene is they're moving Kong via boat to get to where the entrance to the Hollow Earth is, and Godzilla attacks them in the middle of the ocean. And so there's a big fight on all these aircraft carriers where Godzilla ends up winning because Kong needs land to be able to fight. And so then they airlift him to the Arctic, Antarctic, one of the poles where apparently the entrance is.
Antarctic.
Yeah. And they journey into the middle of the Earth style and find out there's a big land there and Kong's people were there and he finds an axe. And then honestly, this movie's kind of a mess.
Well, it's one part kaiju movie, mm-hmm. and then it's other part weird sort of like journey to the center of the earth, like sci-fi film. And I'm like, I really think they kind of did the best they could. I feel like because honestly, I didn't realize there were four movies in the thing. So now I'm like, I need to go back and watch three more movies. And now I'm probably not going to do it. But like, it was, they all the exposition is just like rapid fire sentences, and then like that's it. Like the whole idea that the reason they have to keep Kong in like a big fake facility island thing is because he's an alpha titan, and apparently you can't have two of them, even on the entire fucking planet. You know, and then there's the whole idea. There was like they glossed over the idea that Godzilla and Kong's like species had a war, and then they're just like, oh yeah, they hate each other, and then and that's pretty much it. And then you find an axe that's made out of like a piece of whatever Godzilla's species is, and you're like, okay, we're not going to talk about that. Okay, he has a giant axe with a piece of Godzilla. Cool. All right. But that's what makes him more successful in a fight. He can use tools. All right, we're just gonna... I actually wanted to know more about the Hollow Earth part of the movie. Like, I actually kind of wanted most of the movie to take place there instead of everywhere else.
Yeah, in King of the Monsters, the Hollow Earth thing kind of was neat as a concept. And for, like... okay, this is where all the Titans originated, you know, kind of, okay. And then seeing it and what they did with it, it was disappointing. Like,
yeah.
The Bryan Cranston Godzilla was kind of disappointing because Godzilla shows up for 5 minutes at the end and that's about it. King of the Monsters was really good. There was a good, lots of monster fights, and the human element, which... usually humans are just there to get killed during the monster fights. But, you know, there was kind of a cohesive story about what the humans were doing and how they tied into the monster fights and whatnot. Kong Skull Island was good. People were good. Monster was good. Everything was good. And in this one, the people were just kind of throwaway. Everyone they brought back from Kong, like Millie Bobby Brown had nothing to do. Kyle Chandler was just there. Alexander Skarsgård, like, had this tragic past with his brother, but nothing. The only interesting person was the little girl, I thought.
Yes, agreed.
And it was just kind of sad that it was just made for the monster fights, which were good-ish. They were good fights. Were you rooting for Kong or for Godzilla?
I was rooting for Mechagodzilla because, in all honesty, Mechagodzilla was the coolest fucking thing. Like, I was sad he didn't have a detachable rocket punch, but I will accept the boosters in the shoulder and him, like, flying across the city. So I liked Mechagodzilla because, honestly, it's one of those things where you've seen a gorilla punch something before. Even if you've never seen a King Kong movie, there's a video of a gorilla punching the shit out of something or someone. So you're like, okay. Honestly, the final fight was like the fight between the two of them and Mechagodzilla. That was probably the coolest fight. But in all honesty, I was like, I don't really care who wins. I just want to see Mechagodzilla fire off missiles and shit. Like, I became that mindless like 12-year-old that just wants to see cool laser beams and everything. So I actually, me and another friend were like kind of irritated that Godzilla was kind of passed off as like the villain of the movie.
Yeah, it was very annoying that they made Godzilla the bad guy. And,
yeah.
Because Godzilla's, I was rooting for Godzilla. He's my king of the monsters. especially after the last film, he was the hero of the whole thing.
Oh, yeah.
And I get that you have both Godzilla, who's the hero of his movies, and you have Kong, who's the hero of his movies. And you put two good guys in a fight. And
you know what it is? It's toxic masculinity. Like, most of the movie was just two alpha males fighting with each other over nothing. That's what it is.
You know what would have stopped the fight, though? If Godzilla had said Martha. Because then Cotton would have been like, why did you say that name?
Well, I mean, and it was right there. It was right there. They could have said Mothra. And it would
have been... Absolutely. Get the fuck out of here. Both of you, get the fuck out of here. Get out. We're done. Podcast over.
Mothra, why did you say that name?
Enough. It's over. It's done.
Leave meeting.
There'll probably be another movie. It made enough. It's recouped its break-even point, and it was the most successful launch item on HBO Max thus far. So
don't tell the Snyder fanboys that, please. They get very upset.
Oh boy.
Very upset.
They're just in a state of always upset, though.
I mean, you're not wrong about that.
It's just true.
But overall, I thought it was okay. I would much rather go back and watch either of the last Godzilla or Kong movies than watch this movie again, though.
So if you had to give it a flame rating, what would you give it?
2.5.
You're like, meh. Did I light anything on fire during this movie?
I'd honestly have to say same.
Okay. And that is currently running on HBO Max if you have a subscription to it. And I believe it'd probably still be in the theaters for a little bit longer. I'm sure that the theaters are holding on to movies longer than normal in this COVIDina world that we're living in.
Actually, I think they're holding on to them less. For less than enough times. Yeah. For Warner Brothers movies, I think it's the standard, like, I think it was like 36 days or something. I think it was originally like 40 something days, and now it's down to like 36 days. And then other movie companies have also decreased the amount of time movies are in theaters for this year. There's no word on whether or not that will go back to normal, but all the finance people are like, yeah, no, there's no reason. Like, if this movie did well despite the fact that it was on streaming. So if theaters and studios still make the same money and it's released on streaming, then movie theater companies are probably going to start throwing a hissy fit, which means movies will spend less time in a theater and more and come up on streaming earlier.
Which I find strange, because with less movies just in general coming out right now, you would think that they would have to fill their screens with something.
That would be my thought on it also. I mean, just and the fact that you probably, I mean, aside from states like Florida and Texas, your theaters are probably having to have capacity limits. I would think that you would want to have it longer to be able to try to accommodate the same number of people, but in a, you know, you'd have to have X number of people see the movie in the theater. You would need it to be in there X and a half times longer in order to make that same, but it'll be interesting to see what the movie industry looks like. I do thank HBO Max for that. Streaming and same day, like, you know, same day streaming as the theater release, only for the fact of it's still, you know, I mean, we're still in the midst of a pandemic, no matter how much people would like to think that we're not. Thankfully, vaccine rollout has ramped up and has gotten us to a place where we're in a much better position than we were, you know, through the majority of 2020. But it's nice to have that option to be able to not have to worry about going to a theater. You know, once we get a little bit further in, probably I will say the first time I will probably step foot in a theater will probably be in July for Black Widow. That at that point, and I mean, by the time this comes out, I will pretty much be fully vaccinated according to the CDC guidelines. And I still don't want to step foot in a theater just yet. You know, I would still like to hold off as much as possible. So with Mortal Kombat coming out, from when we record this, what,
Mortal Kombat comes out the 23rd. Yeah,
23rd.
Yeah, so it'll come out just before this releases. But I'm glad that I don't have to worry about going to a movie theater to go see that. Mm-hmm. Because otherwise I probably would wait until it came out on a streaming service or it was out in a capacity where I could watch it at home or on my own schedule. So I'm glad that they've taken the opportunity to do this. I know it fucks with contracts and how much people are getting paid for, you know, this, that, or the other. But when it comes down to making rich people richer or making sure people stay healthy and alive, I'm going to take healthy and alive. That's just me, though. but yeah, so if you have HBO Max, go check it out while it is still available on the streaming service.
Also, let me just say one thing. For those of you that are in front of your computer screens right now, do yourself a favor and look up Rule 34, Godzilla Kong, because I didn't even go looking for it. I did not look for it. And why? I sent you guys a picture in the Facebook chat. That's like kind of cute. But then there's a comic I need to send all of you where it's like Godzilla's just like screaming and he's like, I'm the king of the monsters. And then King Kong just walks up and gives him a peck on the cheek and he goes, yeah, you're my king, sweetie. And then walks off. And you're like, and I'm just like, there's just so much. There is so much. And it is just like, I don't know why. We've all been cooped up in our houses, but I feel like I didn't realize just how much was out there. So yeah.
It's the internet.
But yeah, even though it's the internet, but like it's like I said, if you guys look at the picture, I'm sorry for whatever the algorithm does to all of your social media and everything after that. Like but yeah, it's some of it's cute and some of it is disturbingly accurate.
That's yeah. Yeah. Anywho, go check it out if you haven't seen it. If you are a fan of kaiju films, if you're a fan of just mindless monster beating, then go check that out. Godzilla versus Kong, streaming on HBO Max for a limited time, in the movie theaters for a limited time, and then eventually showing up somewhere. So that is our first topic. Thank you, Eric. BJ, why don't you take it away with our second topic?
So I just want you all to know that I've never, never found J.K. Simmons attractive. However, the character he plays in Invincible could do me in front of my grandmother and I wouldn't even care. I'm not even going to lie. Omni-Man can hit it 50 ways past Sunday. I'm talking about the show Invincible, based on a comic series. I honestly didn't see a trailer for this show till like the day before it launched. It just randomly popped up. Not even on Facebook. It popped up like on my YouTube feed. But it's kind of, I want to say it's almost like a Superman. It's one of those Superman allegories, but the world it takes place in is absolutely fucking hilarious just because, like, you have Omni-Man, who's your Superman construct, and he's on a date with his wife, and a dragon just randomly out of nowhere starts destroying a building. And she's like, honey, there's a dragon. He's like, the military can handle it. I'm on a date with my beautiful wife. And I'm like, wait, what? And I will tell you, the first episode takes a hard right. They're realistic with the gore, but I'm getting ahead of myself. So the main character, Mark Grayson, is played by Steven Yeun, who played Glenn on The Walking Dead. Debbie Grayson, his mother, is played by Sandra Oh, and J.K. Simmons plays Nolan Grayson, his dad. And you've also got Zazie Beetz, who played Domino. She is the love interest, Amber. So from there, it like it's Mark, essentially Mark gets his superpowers, and it's just about this teenager trying to kind of learn like what kind of superhero he wants to be, which is all fine and dandy. But like in the meantime, you've got different superhero constructs. Like instead of the Justice League, it's Guardians of the Globe. Instead of like Teen Titans, it's Fight Force. You've got Teen Squad. But all the different superheroes, a lot of them are fairly original. You've got a character called Monster Girl who turns into this big monster, but when she transforms, it essentially makes her younger. So she looks like she's 13, but she turns into this giant orc thing. And it's you know what it makes me think of? It's like an animated version of The Boys.
Okay.
It's like an animated version of The Boys. You have a murder happens in the first episode, and there's a big mystery around that one. And that's kind of the ongoing like sub arc of the show. But honestly, all the characters are great. Mark's best friend, I think his name's Kevin. I can't remember. I think it's Will. It's his best friend at school. He talks nasty about Omni-Man, and he's just like, yeah, that daddy stash, he can totally turn me out. And he's like, please don't. And he's just like, fine, I'll keep it hetero for you for the rest of the day if that's better. but no, it's got some great lines. There's one of my favorite voice actors, Jason
Mantzoukas.
Jason Mantzoukas plays
Derek.
he plays a character called Rexplode, who kind of has a similar power to Gambit, where he can supercharge the kinetic energy in objects. He's absolutely fucking hilarious every time he takes a step on the screen. So it's honestly, it's a great watch. Mark Hamill's pops up in it. I mean, it is a powerhouse of voice actors and everything.
Drag Race superfan Gillian Jacobs is also part of the cast.
Yep. Mahershala Ali, who's supposed to be the new Blade. He's in the show as like a side character. It's nuts who all they have. Gillian Jacobs, Zachary Quinto.
Gillian with a hard G.
Gillian.
Hard G.
Zachary Quinto plays a character called Robot.
Andrew Rannells for the Broadway gay and Eric. Sandra Oh is there. Seth Rogen is program created by Robert Kirkman, who can wreck me any day of the week.
Any day,
night, holidays. John Hamm, whose penis probably could wreck me. Ezra Miller. Nicole Byer.
Yep. It's
Margo.
Like I said,
he's nailing it right now.
okay, that one's pretty good. I'm not gonna lie, that one's not bad.
Between that and Wipeout, I mean, she's everywhere and nailed it.
Yeah. Oh my god, I need to watch Wipeout. Isn't that Harlow?
It's her and John Cena.
It's her and John Cena. Okay, perfect. The cast is a powerhouse. The writing is super quick and awesome. The mystery behind stuff is really, really cool and engaging. So definitely, it's on Amazon Prime. If you have a Prime membership, it's free. Yeah, no, I'm pretty sure once the season's over, I'm 100% sure I'll probably mention it again on the podcast. But definitely do yourself a favor. By the time this episode drops, they're doing a weekly drop. That's kind of the thing. We're moving back into that now.
We've literally gone away from weekly cable to weekly streaming that will cost us the same as cable.
Yep.
Like, honestly, it's amazing how this has gone. And don't get me wrong, I don't mind weekly series. But at the same time, I'm kind of tired of paying for all of these streaming services. We're just going to have to, we're going to have to build a virtual commune, and everybody gets like, everybody picks two services that they pay for. And then we just all put our passwords into the middle.
Oh no.
And share them all.
We won't be able to do that for long either.
Oh.
Netflix announced they are currently beta testing in certain states the non-sharing program, that even though you can put, they're in the same household as you, the Netflix program will be able to know, be like, no, you have to put, like, we'll be able to figure out your zip code, because the Netflix already has a regional thing that you
which
have to
trick
is
bold. Because yeah. let's say I have a summer home somewhere. Who's to say that me watching it in one place or me watching another place isn't my household? So it'll be
traveling. I'm taking my iPad on a trip. Okay, yeah. I'm going to connect to the Wi-Fi at the hotel. That's in a different zip code than where I live.
Absolutely.
So what the financial, well, the, what the money people are probably are predicting about this is that streaming services are not profitable until possibly 5 or 6 years out after they've begun. So their first 2 years, you take a loss, and then by the time you start making enough money to make your original series, especially if you make a bunch of hits, you're now making money. However, you have super contenders like Disney Plus that, because of the pandemic and everything, it's profitable now. They didn't expect Disney Plus to become profitable till like 2 years from now, but it's profitable now. So what's going to end up happening is with the thing is that if they do a regional password sharing, password prohibition. What could happen is they could offer password sharing as an upcharge. So, like, you can share your account with up to 4 or 5 people, not in your household, for, like, an extra surcharge, which is something that Spotify kind of does, where you can have a family plan, but technically they're all supposed to be in your same household, FYI.
I was going to say Google does the same thing, because you can do that with it used to be Google Play Music, but with YouTube Music, you can do a family plan. And it's a little bit less, because I think it's $11.99 for one person to do ad-free YouTube and YouTube Music. And then if you do a family plan, it's, I think, $14.99 a month for, I think, up to 5 people or 3 people, yeah. Something like that. So, yeah, it's similar. Google does something similar with it. I'll be amazed to see if they follow through. I had seen that they were starting to test the screen that would pop up and say, "Are you sure you're in the same household?" You know, of course I'm going to say yes. So we'll see if they actually follow through with it.
And that's the thing is, I don't really fault them for it, because at this point they've reached the maximum profitability they can do with their current services.
Like, but they're still not profitable. Netflix still is still in the red a shit ton of money. But
apparently not. Apparently they've pulled they're out of the red now. With the pandemic and everything, Netflix and Disney Plus shot way up than what was projected for subscribers, for paying subscribers.
Well, yeah. But I mean, Netflix, even when Netflix was the only, like, you know, pretty much the only game in town, they and producing some of the best online streaming content, they still were bleeding money, because you can only get so much money per person, you know, and there's only so many people that are going to subscribe. And you're paying out this much money, which is why they do a lot of these shows that will end after X number of seasons, whether it's technically 2 seasons split into 4 parts, like a Sabrina. You know, when you get parts 1, part 2, part 3, part 4, they're only contracted 2 seasons, but they're putting it out in 4 parts. And then it stops, because they're not going to renegotiate. They're not going to pay the actors and the crew and all of these people making the show more money, even though it was a huge success, because it's only profitable for this amount of time. Or when you have, you know, what a lot of these streaming services are realizing is when you do a binge watch and you do, or you drop an entire show, people can do a free trial, watch the show, and then cancel. So now you've seen this television show that's this huge water cooler talking point, but with a 7-day free trial, they've watched it already and they don't need to pay anymore.
Isn't that what you're doing?
First off, Paramount Plus is a 30-day free trial. And I've kept it, at least for right this second. So I did think about that, though.
Aaron, his dirty laundry out there. Good.
Right? Right?
You need to get that sound clip of Taste doing the audacity, the gall.
The gumption, the nerves, the gall. Remind me of that, because I totally will. I'll have it for the next episode. Oh my God, that feels like so long ago. But yes, even though we're still in the same season of US Drag Race, UK feels like it was a decade ago. But no, I totally get that whole point of it. But that's why Paramount is doing their original programming in weekly drops. That's why Disney Plus is doing their programming in weekly drops and has so much Marvel content coming that there are essentially only about 8 or so weeks where there isn't Marvel content coming out this year. Overall, between the television shows and the movies, Disney Plus obviously isn't getting the movies right away. As far, it's not like an HBO Max thing, but when you look at the content coming out, it's so saturated across the board that you can't really stop your subscription there. You know, you can't do a 7-day subscription and binge everything and continue to watch it all. So it'll be very interesting to see how they enforce it and how it rolls out and how much of a reaction everybody gives to it. Because I mean, if it comes down to it and people start, you know, either going away from it or canceling the subscriptions, I mean, it could have an impact to kind of loosen the reins on that, so to speak. So
yeah,
it'll be interesting to see how it works. But I still say for everything else, we do a password commune and just put all of our passwords like a streaming party key party or a streaming service key party. We just all throw a password in.
Streaming key party. Once a month, everybody puts their passwords in a bowl with their keys, and they have to trade passwords for one streaming service.
I'm going home with Amazon Prime tonight.
Oh, I got Crunchyroll again.
Oh, but that is Invincible. And I don't know why, but I continually, anytime we say it, I want to say it like it's the opening to Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. Invincible. Oh, they alive, damn it.
They do this weird thing where like the title screen for the episode isn't till like almost the middle of the episode or sometimes the end. And it's every time, it's like the first time in the episode they say his superhero name, Invincible. So like the first episode where he gets, like, he actually shows up and somebody's like, who are you supposed to be? He's like, I'm, and then the title screen. And you're like, wait, what? So it's kind of disjointed, but it works. Like, you're not expecting it. All of a sudden, it's just the word Invincible appears on the screen and you're like, ah.
Interesting. Well, now that I'm pretty much done with my binge of Survivor and the Challenge, I am going to have to check out Invincible, because why not? It sounds like a lot of fun. So that is Invincible, streaming now on Amazon Prime. All right, y'all. We hope that you are enjoying this and all of the other phenomenal geeky content coming your way from the Nerdy Show Network /Omniverse. We hope that you have checked out our brand new website, I think this may be the last time I call it brand new. I think it's been like 3 months at this point. So, but if you have not done so, go check out our website, flameonshow.com, newly revamped. It has all of the ways that you can listen to us. You can watch us on YouTube or Twitch for our streaming, for our interviews, for games, all of that fun stuff. Not so generic games, because Eric hasn't been on Twitch to start streaming yet. I keep waiting for that notification. One day. It has where you can go
when you least expect it.
I'll just be sitting around one day, and all of a sudden it'll be like, generic games is now streaming, and I will have I will faint like a medieval lady, just or like Jean Grey in the 90s X-Men cartoon. But it also has where you can go and support us, like our Threadless shop and our Patreon, patreon.com/flameonshow, where you can become a patron and help us create more amazing content like we are doing for you right now. And I would like to take this time to go ahead and give a huge shout out our good friend Zach, who is one of our newest pledges on Patreon. A huge shout out to you, Zach. Thank you for not only being our friend, but being a supporter now on Patreon. Here's your shout out. We appreciate you. We thank you for being a delightful member of now our Patreon community. But thank you, Zach, for being our patron. You can join at any one of the four levels that we currently have. Brand new Patreon levels coming very, very soon. I know I've been saying that, but I promise they are coming. But in the meantime, you can join on and support us now at any of the levels. And when the new ones come up, we'll give you a heads up, and you can check out the new patron levels there. So thank you for supporting us. And if you would like to, that is patreon.com/flameonshow. Flameonshow.com is our website, and you can always check out Linktree, our linktr.ee/flameonshow, that has all the ways that you can find our podcast. It has our Threadless shop. It has all of our Twitch channels. It has everything all in one handy dandy spot for you to be able to check out. So do that, and thank you for all of your support.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
All right, let us get into our third and final topic. This one is mine, and it is a Paramount Plus, formerly a CBS All Access exclusive movie. It apparently was their first original film done for the streaming service. And it is now part of the Paramount Plus streaming family. And it is the film Console Wars. It is a 2020 documentary directed by Jonah Tulis and Blake J. Harris. The film is about the 1990s console wars between Nintendo and Sega in the 16-bit era and the rise and fall of Sega in the home console market. It's based on Harris's 2014 book and the first original film for CBS All Access, now the Paramount Plus Network. It was 1990. Sega, a startup gaming company, assembled a team to take on Nintendo, the world's greatest video game company. A make-or-break conflict pit brother against brother, Sonic against Mario, and American capitalism against Japanese tradition. So this film was I believe it was actually an award winner at the 2020 South by Southwest Film Festival. And it is really pretty freaking cool. The primary focus is on Sega. It goes into the creation of Sega of America and how it basically started up as a way to combat Nintendo's monopolization of the home video game market. It goes into detail about how the company started, how, like, where they were coming from with everything. The addition of Tom Kalinske, who at that point in time was huge in the toy market. He was basically credited for the resurgence of Barbie at that point in time, because pretty much Barbie was seen as having run her course, and he said, no, she can do anything, and was really behind the revitalization of Barbie in the, you know, in the 80s, as well as a favorite of mine, He-Man, and basically the brainchild of some of our favorite toys from the 80s. So when he was brought on to join Sega, he kind of put it out there. Apparently, the best part about this was he was on vacation in the head of Sega, actually Sega Japan, went and found him while he was on the beach with his family and was like, we came here looking for you. We want you to work for us. And he was like, no, that's I'm not doing, you know, that's not what I'm going to do. And his daughter was like, this man came and found you. Like, he came looking for you. Go do this. And he went to Japan, met with the execs at Sega, and essentially brokered a deal with them to have carte blanche decision-making ability over formation of Sega of America. It also goes into Shinobu Toyota, who was working for another company at the time in America on a green card and doing all of this, like, you know, a work visa. And he didn't want to go back to Japan. He wanted to fulfill his version of the American dream. So he took the job with Sega, this brand new upstart, you know, company here in the US, and moved into a Comfort Suites. And my favorite part of this entire film is the fact that this man to this day has not moved out of that Comfort Suites. He still lives there part time.
Wow.
But still lives in this Comfort Suites hotel. It actually does have some input from Nintendo's senior vice president of marketing and corporate communications, George Harrison, Howard Lincoln, who worked for Nintendo. And it shows kind of how it dives into Nintendo's beginnings in the video game market, how with the epic fail of E.T. for the Atari 2600, how that basically destroyed the video game market. How you went from having just watching your television to being able to play games on it, you know, with Pong and television and the Atari, and how E.T. completely obliterated any hope for that actually ever being something more than what it was at that point in time. Into Nintendo, being this thing, like just kind of coming out of nowhere and having been around for a while and having done card games and all these other things, you know, the Famicom, and getting into this market and basically revitalizing and changing the video game industry, the home video game industry. And it was so funny seeing the old pictures of what this Japanese system looked like, because it looked a lot like the Super Nintendo, and just getting kind of that nostalgia feel for it. And then watching how Nintendo basically put a chokehold on the market and how they really did not allow for any other competitors to be in the market at that point in time. And it's so weird because it's such a piece of nostalgia. It's such a piece of my life, my history, and I'm sure for you guys as well. And then to kind of look back at it and go, wow, they were kind of assholes about the whole thing. And that was really the impetus for Sega of America to be a thing, because they wanted to take down this titan, this company that really had made it impossible for anybody else to be a part of this. And going from the 8-bit to the 16-bit and watching how they kind of, the thought process behind everything, and not only creating the system into packaging, you know, I don't want to say a launch title, but a flagship title with a console, you know, the creation of Sonic the Hedgehog, all of these different things. Like, it's amazing to watch a company rise into something as, you know, prolific and as large as Sega was. And from there, kind of watching it explode, watching them find a way to not only make it into the market, but the fact that when Walmarts would not give them the time of day, that they actually went down to Arkansas and set up a tent outside of like the main Walmart down there, because that's where they're based out of. And they set up tents and had people come up and play their Sega Genesis, and to the point where the head of Walmart at the time was like, all right, please just stop it. We'll give you 4 feet of space in the store. Like, just please take down this tent. And watching, like, I had forgotten about the Sega yell. Like, it's it's been so long. Like, I completely forgot about it.
Sega!
They actually have, like, all of the former Sega, like, people, like, the people that started the company do that towards the end of the film, and it's hysterical to watch. But how they found a way to kind of come at Nintendo from a completely different tact, targeting an older audience, you know, the teen boys versus young kids. It goes into Mortal Kombat. I didn't realize Mortal Kombat was the first game to be released on both platforms, you know, because you had your exclusive content for Nintendo. You had your exclusive content on Sega, you know, the games that they were developing themselves. And then you have Mortal Kombat that came into the home console arena on both of them. And I absolutely remember the fact that Mortal Kombat was muted and censored for Nintendo. I didn't remember that it was green, just like slime that flew out of the people as you beat them. But but I did remember that they had censored it, because obviously Nintendo still to this day in most ways is very much a younger skewed gaming system. But then it goes into them appearing in front of Congress because of the violence in video games, because of the, you know, attack on children that these things were doing. You know, you have all of these different, I have the IMDb up here, but I honestly could not even point out his name without having it directly pointed out in front of me. But one of the guys from Nintendo because he felt like his voice wasn't being heard in, you know, these big group meetings, jumped ship from Nintendo to Sega. And when they got called to testify in front of Congress, Sega actually sent this dude who worked for Nintendo, who now works for Sega, to go testify. So you had like one of the highest people in Nintendo and then this guy that used to work for them to basically jab at Nintendo and rile them up and be like, not only are you like now a part of this, but this person who used to work for you is now, you know, also testifying. And to see them kind of go back and forth and just how shady they were to each other through all of that, you know, Sega thinking that Nintendo had basically kind of put it out there and sent this to Congress, like, and to make this a big deal. So they pulled out the gun hardware that Nintendo had put together, you know, like the laser gun and the scope and all that, and kind of threw that back in their face of like, you want to say that you knew that this was going to be an issue, so you censored Mortal Kombat, even though it was going to be a detriment to your bottom line, but you're making guns, you know, as part of the gaming console. It was so interesting. Now as an almost 40-year-old man, where looking back at all of this and going, this was my childhood, this is what was going on at the time, to, you know, Sonic Tuesday and doing a coordinated international launch for the game to be released everywhere on the same day, which had apparently at that point never been done. It's something that we think about as being just the norm, the standard, that this, you know, Sonic 2 being that first game to do it, you know, it really showed a different side of everything from my childhood. And then it dives into really Sega's fork in the road, which would have either made or broke them. And there was a movie company that was in the process of developing a 64-bit chip, and Sony was getting into the market. And of course, once they bring in Sony, they do a video clip from Mariah Carey's Someday, which at that point I was like, this film has won me over even more so now. Because, you know, you throw Mariah Carey in there and I'm totally done. Exactly. But they basically started up a partnership with Sony to try to take down Nintendo, which ended up being their downfall because Nintendo jumped on the opportunity to work on that 64-bit chip. Sony and Sega ended up at each other's throats, and Sega rushed the Saturn to the market, which was only a 32-bit system with two 32-bit chips eventually. But it was their biggest misstep and what eventually led to the downfall of the company. And to watch kind of how all that momentum shifted with Sony bringing the PlayStation into the market. And it basically ends, it doesn't, the film kind of starts to taper off at the end with the PlayStation and the E3 convention, where all three of them were making their big presentations. Nintendo was showing off the graphics of what would eventually become the Nintendo 64, and their decision to wait another year. I think this was, what, 95? So they decided to wait because the hardware wasn't going to match up. You know, the games weren't where they needed to be. The Sega Saturn was being released for $400, and they show a clip from Sony's presentation at that E3 where the guy is talking, and he brings up, he's like, I forget the guy's name. He's like, he's going to come up and join me for a brief presentation. He literally walks up on stage and goes, $299, and then walks away. And basically that was the end of it. And it just, it showed that, you know, the Sega Saturn only sold, I think, like 30 million units. I don't remember if it's if it was the N64, whichever Nintendo system they referenced at that point, sold 60 million. And it showed that, you know, the Sony PlayStation went on to be the highest selling console of all time, selling over 100 million units. And I guess at the end of it, it really just shows you that Sony won the console war at that point. But hey, Nintendo still rocking strong. Sony still rocking strong. Microsoft in the game now, and Sega having it didn't give a you know, an end date for it, but it basically said that, you know, within a few years they left the video game industry. And my favorite part about that E3 was that the guy that jumped ship from Nintendo to Sega jumped ship from Sega to Sony. And he and the other guy, one of the other guys from Sega, were in the same hotel for that E3. And Sega had taken out like a big like banquet area and the pool area. And they had these inflatable, like these big blow up Sonic balloons. And the guy from Sony that jumped ship from Sega to Sony apparently went around and popped the balloons and just had them all deflate into the pool. And then the right pettiness. Out of the, oh, the level of unprofessionalism. So amazing. And the fact that the guy from Sega was like, went up to him, was like, can we just calm this down? And the other guy was like, no, we can't. I was like, you catty ass bitches. I love it. And then they show the footage from the Thanksgiving Day parade that year, where it was the year they introduced the Sonic balloon into the parade, and it hit a light pole and deflated and injured like a cop, a woman, a 10-year-old child. I was like, that was not the year for blow up Sonics at all. But overall, it was super entertaining, super informative. I love the fact that it was very much documentary style, a lot of interview pieces, but it was intercut as they were talking and describing different scenarios and different meetings and conversations. They actually animated a lot of it in that 16-bit style, Mortal Kombat style, some like just the 16-bit games of the era. They did like these beautifully like rendered pieces to accompany those conversations. And it just, like, there was talk about one of the Japanese heads of Sega of Japan, and they were talking about his hair and like how it kind of like the way that it was like kind of rolled up at the top of his head, and how he was mad, and they did it in a fighting game style, and his hair, like, he would whip his hair out and it would like hit the Sony man, the Sega man, the businessman on the other side of the screen. Like, it was extremely well done. I can see why it was an award winner, because when you think about documentaries, especially for topics like this, you think of a lot of people just talking, like I have been for this whole time, and just describing things and all of that. And this added an extra layer and an extra depth of visual storytelling on top of it all, and it was super cute. So I mean, if you haven't seen it out there, go and watch it, especially if you're a child of the 80s and the 90s, growing up through these console wars, and how the marketing was, you know, made it seem like if you had Nintendo and you didn't have Sega, you weren't cool, you know. All of that stuff is just kind of ridiculous and fun to look back at now, but it's kind of like, wow, yeah, this is a very interesting way to market to children. did either of you guys watch this?
I haven't, but did you ever watch the docuseries on Netflix called High Score?
I've seen parts of it.
It sounds a lot like that one.
Because they did dedicate most of an episode to the kind of Nintendo Sega console wars, because when you were talking about the story of Kalinske, that it was very familiar because they had told part of that on the High Score documentary. But it would be interesting to see a full movie version of just that period of time.
Yeah.
Just Nintendo and Sega and their competition.
I don't often watch a lot of movies, but I do highly recommend this one. It's a very interesting look. And I mean, the three of us are all in the same age bracket, and are also, you know, we've had video games be a part of our lives pretty much, you know, for the majority of it. To watch in depth kind of how all of this, and this is very much from a Sega perspective, you know, so that's also a very interesting take on it. There are representatives from the other companies that are involved in the filmmaking process, but this is very much a Sega film. How it came about, how the rise and fall of a company, and how it you know, all of this came to be. So I definitely recommend this. It's a 4.5 flames for me when it comes down to flame ratings.
Well, and the company still exists. They dedicated everything now to software instead of consoles.
Oh yeah, yeah,
which was a smart move on their point.
For sure.
It's just funny how Sega ends up making games for Nintendo now.
Yes.
That's it. I mean, pretty much when it comes down to it. I mean, they pretty much now are a subsidiary, for lack, you know, in for lack of a better term, I should say, of Nintendo. You know, you've got Sonic being licensed to Nintendo. So you have, you know, Mario and Sonic at the Olympics, and like all of these different games that are being made. The company that they tried so hard to dethrone and did for a period of time is now basically their partner for a lot of these things. And I think that really stems from the all-out war that happened during this, what's documented in this film with Sony and Sega. Because basically Sega's move to join up with Sony to make, like to incorporate Sony pieces into Sega was their way to try to like really take the cake and knock Nintendo out completely. And they never made it work, you know? And a lot of that was because Sega of Japan did not want to do things the way that Sega of America. There was a lot of, it was a company divided. You know, you had Sega of America that was doing things in such a particular way, in such an American way, such a capitalistic way, that Sega of Japan was like, no, we're not going to do this. And at the end of the day, Sega of Japan being the parent company, being the ones that really put that final yes or no on things, when they said no, and that was it. And that led to the Sony partnership not working and not being, you know, being able to be a thing. It led to them missing out on the opportunity to work with the company that made the 64-bit chips that the N64 ended up taking on. It, like that point in time, that singular point in time was really the end of days for Sega. So to watch it all in like this glorious, massive detail, and it's a 92-minute film, including credits. So it's not going to take up, it's no 4-hour and 2-minute Zack Snyder's Justice League. So you don't have to devote a whole, you know, like a whole crazy amount of time to it.
Just wait for the Zack Snyder's console wars, though.
It's 8 hours long and it covers every console. There's a whole section. There's a whole hour and a half part just on the Intellivision. It's great. Crazy. I love it. But yeah, that's Console Wars on Paramount Plus, formerly CBS All Access. It came out in September of last year, I believe, is when it premiered, September 23rd of 2020. But yeah, it's super cute. It's very informative and an interesting watch. So if you have some time, go check it out. And I'm definitely going to have to go back and watch, finish watching High Score on Netflix. And then I feel like I'll have a better understanding of that portion of High Score once I go back and watch it. All right. I think it is time for us to hit that question mark block at Nintendo World Japan. I want to go so bad. It looks so cute. I want to go.
In 3 years, you can come back down here to go there.
I don't feel like I want to step foot in Florida for quite some time.
Well, then me and Eric will have fun at Nintendo Land then.
Isn't the one in California being built first?
Yeah, no.
No?
No?
No, because they've already built. It's going to be a part of the third park. So I don't even know when that third park's going to open for Universal here.
It was supposed to open, I think, spring of 2022, but I think now it's been pushed back to fall 2023 because of the shutdown. But they've already broken ground and started building the third park here. I haven't heard of them breaking ground at the one in Hollywood, because the one in Hollywood's almost landlocked. Like, they don't have much space to expand. So all I know is the one in Japan, I believe, is already opened. It's doing soft openings, at least. And then, no, it's open over there. And the one here will open with the new park. But I think 2023 is when the one here is supposed to open with the new park.
This doesn't seem right, but it says that it opened already in Hollywood, which that just does not make sense.
Yeah, that doesn't seem right at all.
Construction update on California's Super Nintendo World.
Okay, so I guess they are doing one there.
Universal Hollywood Super Nintendo World is moving quickly. I feel like Hollywood will open beforehand.
Okay, the pushback then probably did that.
In which case, I will go to California. but we are going to hit that question mark block, and out will pop a green and white mushroom, giving us our one-ups. These are the things that are giving us life.
Life, 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 life.
In the month of April 2021. Eric, why don't you kick us off? What is your one-up for this month?
So, going to circle back around to Nicole Byer and her new season of Nailed It, along with Jacques Torres.
Oh.
Yes, it is subtitled. What is it subtitled?
Double Trouble.
Yeah. Because it's a team competition now.
Oh, boy. Oh Lord. So
you have double the cooks in the kitchen for double the disasters.
Which I find very interesting in a COVID world, because so I haven't watched it, but I know that they have modified some things, including not running over to pick out their item like in the first round. Yeah. So it amazes me that when you're going to do that, but then double the amount of contestants, well, it just seems like really weird.
Yeah, they've certainly spaced things out, so like the three judges are spaced out at the table, and
do they have plexiglass dividers like Drag Race?
And no, they do not.
Oh.
But like in Drag Race, there are drag queens in this season.
Come on, Stephanie Child.
On episode 2, you have the third member of Stephanie's Child, Laguna Blue, who teams up with her friend Sell Manila to compete. Yeah, but overall it's a fun season. Some of the teams are, I don't necessarily go for their dynamic, but it's a fun evolution of the series, but I would be glad to go back to just three cooks in the kitchen. but it's fun.
I've heard that there was some eye candy.
Yeah. I mean, I can't place it right now because Nailed It's one of those shows that I watch and I'm totally absorbed as it's happening. And then I'm like, okay, it's out of my mind now. I enjoyed that.
That's me with everything right now. I just call that my COVID brain. As soon as we're done with this recording, I will probably forget everything that we talked about.
No, but you won't, because you'll have to edit this.
Oh, true. But then as soon as I'm done editing and go to write up the episode description, I'll be like, what the fuck were the topics again?
You'll have to listen to it again. You need a notepad when you're editing it.
I mean, I've got post-it notepads all around, like legit, like all around my desk, and I still don't. Like, I just, I will go back, or I will figure out what we've talked about, because that's how I've now come up with the episode titles. I try to find some way to like make it a cute and kitschy kind of combination of our topics, but I used to not do that. I used to like find a fun way to like incorporate one word, which would be our SEO hot word of the episode. And now I'm just like, let me just take our topics and mash them up into a pseudo sentence. I mean, literally, I think one of them was Zack Snyder's League of Drag Falcons or something like that. I was like, can you guess what we talk about in this episode? Oh, goodness. But yeah, Double Trouble, the new season of Nailed It, now streaming on Netflix, starring on-again, off-again Drag Race judge Nicole Byer. BJ, what is your one-up?
So I have discovered a music artist called Queen Herbie. And
is she fully loaded?
She is no. She,
so is Lohan or warm up act?
Thank you. That is definitely worth the horns. No. So Queen Herbie is actually a rebranded music artist that we've heard before, and that would be the lyrical half of Carmen, who did Broken Hearted a cappella. Like she had pretty much three or four like big hits that you couldn't get away from. Like I want to say probably about 8 years ago, but I didn't realize it was her until I found her on TikTok, and she put up one of her videos where she did a cover of a Busta Rhymes verse, and she's just like back when I was starting out, and I'm like, wait, what? And then she's like me now. But she's just released her first. Actually, no, she's still releasing her singles. So she hasn't released an album yet. She's got five EPs, and she just dropped a new single called Juice. My favorite song, my two top favorite songs of hers are Sugar Daddy and Vitamins. So I will. I'll probably post her video up on the Twitter and the Facebook page for everybody to check out. But yeah, definitely check her out. She's up on TikTok as Queen Herbie, and she's up on Spotify and iTunes as Queen Herbie.
And just to specify, it's Q-V-E-E-N.
Yes.
And Herbie E-Y, not I-E.
Yes. I always forget the V, the Q-V-E, because I don't know. Queen.
God, she pulled a Chiverches.
She pulled a Chiverches.
A Chiverches chicken.
Is that Chiverches chicken on Chiverch Street?
I'm gonna go see the live Chiverches show down the road from Chiverches Chicken, and Kaveen Herbie is opening for them
on Chiverch Street. Don't forget. Oh, goodness. I love it. So Kaveen Herbie. go check them out. Carmen, not San Diego, and Herbie, not fully loaded. I love it. I when you were saying Carmen, I was like, okay, I remember, but I could not remember the songs. And then, I remember you've done some of them. Lena used to do some Carmen back in the day, Barrioke and the Bear Den.
Yep. I did acapella. Acapella was the one I always would do.
Anytime I hear acapella, I automatically think Khalees. So it's hard for me to wrap my brain around that. Like, I know that more than one person has, you know, a song named something, but that's just where my brain goes. That's my automatic take there. So Queen Herbie, go check her out and enjoy some sugar daddy and insulin. I mean, vitamins. All right. So before I get to my one up, I want to give a shout out one to a podcast called Gayest Episode Ever. Drew Mackey is one of the hosts. I now follow him on the Twitters, which has pretty much become my primary social media outlet. I am taking a break from Facebook, or at least my personal Facebook. I'm still posting on the Bears in the City page for game night, Wednesday nights, on twitch.tv/Bears in the City. When this comes out, we will have moved to 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central. So come and play along with us, jackbox.tv, on twitch.tv/Bears in the City. But on the Twitters, Drew G. Mackey is his handle, posts a lot of just random thoughts and things about life from a middle-aged gay man's perspective, which is right up my alley because I am a middle-aged gay man as well. And he is also a delight for the eyes, and posted a shirtless photograph of himself looking for follows on his podcast, Sissis. Because he has not just one, but two. And the first one is one that Eric has actually brought up on our show before. And that is Gayest Episode Ever. And his other is Singing Mountain. It is a podcast with music for your pixelated world, hosted by Drew. So I went and subscribed to both of his podcasts. I've started listening to Gayest Episode Ever. Even though I don't always agree with some of the takes, especially Drew's absolute disdain for Will and Grace, I see where it has its flaws and its issues, but I also enjoyed a lot of parts of Will and Grace. So it was funny. He and his co-host, whose name is escaping me. What's that?
Glenn Lakin.
Glenn, yes. Thank you. Yes. He and Glenn had two guests on for that episode, and they were kind of going around towards the end of it, and they do like a question at the end of the episode, and the three of them, Glenn, Drew, and one of the guests, like, all really don't like Will and Grace, and the last one was like, I don't really share the disdain for the series. And I was like, oh, okay, at least I feel better, you know, chuckling at some of the clips that are being played during the show. But it is really kind of cool seeing these shows and episodes being doing a deep dive into these episodes. It is interesting and weird putting a 2021 filter and lens on shows that are, you know, 10, 15, 20, 30 years old. But it's always good to go back and examine these things and where they've come from and where we're at now, and kind of showing how we can enjoy them, but to also look at them from that perspective of a more enlightened and a more aware point in time where we are right now. So big shout out to Drew. If you're listening to this, I love you, but maybe we can find a way for Drew to get onto come onto the show and chat with us in the not too distant future. I also want to give a shout out to another thing that makes me smile from ear to ear whenever I see it on my Twitter feed, and that is Tony Talks. On Twitter, he is I Am Tony Tweets. On a lot of his other stuff, he's I Am Tony Talks, T-A-L-K-S. I think on TikTok, he's I Am Tony Talks, T-O-K-S. Basically, it's I Am Tony and then a modified version of the last part for the platform that he's on. But he is a content creator that, for the most part, does videos by himself, kind of in the same vein of how I enjoy Ryan George and his pitch meetings and content like that. But a lot of times there are fantastic wigs involved and just different scenarios in which he interacts with himself. And it's I don't know if he is part of the LGBT community, but a lot of his content tends to have a very LGBT kind of haze over it, and I love it. So go check him out on Twitter. I Am Tony Tweets on Twitter. I Am Tony Talks and Talks and all those others on the other platforms. But the thing that has been giving me life, because it's been what I've been consuming the most of in the past month, is Paramount Plus. Yes, another streaming service. Yes, it was CBS All Access beforehand. But with the integration of all of the Paramount Viacom properties, you now are getting your CBS, you're getting your VH1s and your MTVs and all these other networks worth of content that are being brought in, including things like Console Wars, you know, an original film. You're getting the Real World Homecoming, the reunion of the original cast almost 30 years later, bringing up such conversations like the Becky and Kevin argument heard around the world from 1992 about race, which takes on a whole different meaning in the year 2020 when this was filmed. You get the Challenge All-Stars, which, while the Challenge on MTV is growing and evolving and you're bringing in new cast members from different shows, Big Brother and Survivor, and actually on this most current season, somebody from Ultimate Beastmaster, which I did not think that would actually be a show that would cross over into the Challenge world. It did. Although I was surprised to see Natalie from Survivor, considering she was on the 40th season of Survivor and on this most recent season of The Challenge. She must have filmed them pretty quickly back to back. But they have put together a lot of content, and it actually is a pretty cool platform. Yes, it has its bugs. Yes, it has its issues where sometimes it's not easy to navigate through things, but there's a lot of fantastic content. So go check it out. They actually give you a 30-day free trial and not just a 7-day. So you can go check it out, watch a bunch of stuff, see if you like it. You have option for limited commercials, no commercials, a whole bunch of different things there. You can do a year subscription if you don't want to do monthly. But there's a lot of programming that I enjoy, including these reality shows. And the Challenge All-Stars is fantastic for me because all of the competitors, for the most part, are in their 40s. These are the OG Real World and Road Rules contestants. And their music scoring is phenomenal because they are on point with their demographic. They know who they're catering to and what this age range is. I was telling the boys before we started recording this, in one episode during a heartfelt moment, they played Seal's Don't Cry. And then during the trivia portion, when everybody was getting questions wrong, they were falling through the panels and, you know, doing a 20-foot drop into water. They played, En Vogue's My Lovin', parentheses, Never Gonna Get It, with the, and now it's time for a breakdown, Never Gonna Get It, Never Gonna Get It. And it was just a montage of people getting questions wrong and falling through the panels. So bravo to whoever is picking the music, because it is an 80s and 90s wet dream of music. So bravo. So that's what's giving me life this month. So with that, it is time to wrap up this episode of Flame On. We thank you all for listening, for supporting us, for enjoying us. Or if you are just hate listening because you're a completionist like I am, and that's why I've watched 70 seasons of reality competition shows in the past 4 months, we thank you for being there for us. Go check us out online. FlameOnShow.com is our website. You can go, all of our links to everything are on our website. You can also check out our link tree, linktr.ee/FlameOnShow. And if you would like, you can go over and help support the show monetarily and become a patron on our Patreon, patreon.com/FlameOnShow, and become a patron just like our friend Zach, who is our newest patron. So thank you all. And until we meet again, bye, bitch.
Bye.
Bye.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.